Hey everybody, welcome back to Smart Mouth. This is your host Catherine with a little advertisement before we get into today's episode. There is a online furniture store called Jungalow. That's like bungalow, but with a J, like a jungle bungalow. Jungalow, you get it. I like all the stuff there, and I also like the way that the store operates in kind of a people first philosophy. It's a store with a mission to encourage people to like create a home, their surroundings that make them feel happy and healthy and also inspired. And luckily enough, all the stuff at the store is really cute. I even saw that Crystal, who hosts one of my favorite podcasts, The Read, posted about buying one of the chairs that they have over at shop.jungalow.com, which also sells lighting and other furniture and art prints and lifestyle goods, you know, little trays, cute little things. I personally have my eye on the Cosmic Desert wallpaper. I just have never been able to decide if I wanted an ivory or in teal. But I think I'm going to make my decision soon because Jungalow has partnered with this podcast, Smart Mouth, and is offering listeners 15% off your order when you use the code SMARTMOUTH. When you check out, and that code is SMARTMOUTH, all one word, all in caps, like you're yelling it and you're really excited about it, which you are because it gives you 15% off. So just go to shop.jungalow.com, and again, Jungalow is spelled J-U-N-G-A-L-O-W, shop.jungalow.com. Pick out some cute stuff, enter code SMARTMOUTH, get your 15% off, and then enjoy your new furnishings. And now, on to the show. This is Smart Mouth, and I'm your host, Catherine Spires. And this week, we're in a construction zone. You never know where we're going to end up with Shirley Chung. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Catherine.
Thank you so much for coming on this show, specifically because you're crazy busy right now. You have 47 projects going
on? Yes, a lot of. Like, I feel like there's a million projects all coming at me at the same time, right?
Yeah, it's bonkers. So, a lot of people know you from your two seasons of Top Chef.
Yep.
And then you also are like, moving into LA, I didn't know, because you had a restaurant in Irvine.
Yes.
And now you're like coming into Los Angeles. Is that new for you or have you worked here before?
No, this is actually first time for me to work or open a restaurant in LA.
Okay.
I left Irvine restaurant about like more than a year now. So immediately after last time I've been on Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to LA beginning of this year, officially, beginning of this year.
Officially. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're opening a restaurant and then a stall at this new food hall in Los Angeles. But did it get switched?
Yeah, totally got switched. So opening Miss Chi in Culver City. Mm-hmm. So this is our main location. This is also my first venture in Los Angeles. And then it just happened that in the process of me getting Miss Chi together, I met this group of amazing people at LA The Phil, which is the food hall next to LAFC, the new soccer stadium.
And all of a sudden, all of LA is obsessed with soccer.
Yeah, I know, right? Which is amazing. And then LAFC as the first year soccer team, and they're like ranked number 3 or something, like super high. It's impressive. It's better than Galaxy right now. It's crazy.
It's got to be like new team energy. Like, but everyone's just so hyped for it.
Yeah, no, they're all the fan. You can see, you feel the energy.
Yeah.
Like, it's never the same until you get into a stadium and watch a game.
Yeah.
Like, literally, beginning of the game, all the cheerings and everybody standing up, all the energy and the noises, not noises, the song is amazing. It's so much fun. Like, I don't watch soccer, but like, I was like, oh, I'm a soccer fan now.
I know. It is. I think I would go to a soccer game because the Galaxy is too far away.
Yeah.
But this is like an in Los Angeles.
Yeah, this is
team.
Like downtown.
Yeah, yeah, which is fun. So, did you mean to open the brick and mortar first and then the concession? Or,
oh yeah,
yeah,
no, totally 100%. No, but as everybody know, open a restaurant anywhere, not just in LA, there's always delay.
Yeah.
So our Culver City location is supposed to schedule to open the end of July.
Okay. And we are recording in September.
Yes. And I was like, call me soon, summer. And then like, please don't go, summer. Please don't go. Yeah. So very soon.
Okay. Very soon. All right. And you have a cookbook coming out.
I do. So like I say, I have a million projects.
Yeah. People can pre-order it already, right?
Yes. They can pre-order on Amazon already.
What's the name of it?
The name is called Chinese Heritage Cooking in My American Kitchen. So literally sharing a lot of my personal recipes growing up. But most importantly is I really want to showcase that to cook Chinese food, you don't have to have a wok. You don't have to have all those specialty tools. What you need is the correct ingredient.
Okay.
And using seasonal fresh produce from local, and then we can still produce Chinese American food.
Interesting. That sounds great. And more grocery stores around the country are getting more kinds of ingredients.
Yeah, totally.
So it's good timing to be like talking about how to use some of those ingredients.
Yep.
So you worked at Chino Poblano in Las Vegas, at the Cosmopolitan,
right? Yes, I opened Chino Poblano.
You did. Okay, yeah. So I've eaten your food.
Okay,
it turned
great.
Out I wasn't
perfect.
Sure.
Yay.
But I went to the Cosmopolitan like a month after it opened.
Okay, yeah, you're totally it's my food.
Awesome.
I was there. You probably ate the dumplings that I fought.
Yes, definitely. And I also know that I ate the Ru Jia Mao. Is that how you pronounce it?
Street sandwich. Yep.
So good. So I had had it in China and couldn't find it anywhere in Los Angeles. And so when I saw it on your menu, I lost my damn mind. But yours was made with pork, right? Mm-hmm. And the ones that I had been like
lamb.
In Islamic China. Yeah.
Yep.
But same flavors and everything. Can you explain to everybody like what's in it? Because it's so good.
So I like to call Rou Jia Mao the original hamburger ultimately, right? So it's made of two Chinese flatbread. And then it's very different. It's not steamed. It's actually toasted on grill. That's how they cook it. So it's very much to like similar to a naan, like the texture.
Yeah.
And then inside is chopped protein. So it can be chopped lamb if it's Islamic region. It can be chopped pork, but then there's also chopped tofus. So like mainly is something minced and then get stuffed into this pocket looking soft, toasty flatbread. And it's called Rou Jia Mao sandwich. So Rou means meat. Jia means sandwich. Mo means bread. So literally it's a meat, like meat bread.
You know that a lot of people say that the word Mao is because Chairman Mao liked this food so much?
No.
People love making stuff up.
Right, totally, 100%. No, but then is actually that last word is Mo is means bread in Chinese. It doesn't pronounce Mao. I think people just like to play that connection. So they're like, oh, there's a story to tell.
Yeah. No, it's just the name of the food.
Yeah.
Everybody, calm down. So when you sent me your email about your favorite foods, you had a long list, which was great. And I thought it was hilarious that the only one that you put like parameters around was bolognese. Because that one you're like, listen, this is how you cook it. So tell me what your rules for bolognese are.
So I love my bolognese also because I cook Italian for a really long time.
Okay.
I cook Italian for Marbo Tali for 4.5 years. And I opened literally three of his restaurants in Las Vegas.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, so, and then I also, because working for him, and then so we did, when we're doing R&D for Italy project, we spent a month in Italy. And one of my favorite cities is Bologna. And when I was in Bologna, one of my favorite lunch was at Ristorante Diana.
Uh-huh.
So that's one really old school ristorante that they're known for three dishes. One is tortellini in Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is bolognese in tagliatelle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is bollito misti, which is like a boiled meats and tongues and all those delicious things served with pickles and mustard.
Yeah.
So that's like ultimate favorite restaurant experience, but at the same time that's the first time that I have true bolognese in Bolognese.
Okay.
And I realized that first of all, they don't use as much garnish, and then everybody have to understand the veal in Italy is a lot more mature than the veal that we have in America. Like literally the veal, it looks like, well, it's supposed to look like young cow. Like our veal is almost like milk fat, looks like pork, really light in color.
Yeah.
But over there, the veal is actually dark, has more muscular colors and everything. So the flavor is deeper. And then their bolognese, literally there's no garnish. There's not even parsley in there. It's just meat and noodle. The noodle is perfect. The meat is perfect.
Yeah.
The ragu is a little bit more coarse. It's not grinded so finely like a lot of restaurants in America does.
Right.
So in a way, I almost feel like a lot of restaurants, like Marble Tali Group included, the bolognese that we used to make included is we after, you know, it was veal and pancetta, and after we cook for 2 hours, then we blend it down with like a stick blender, so mm-hmm. make it more like a sauce.
Yeah.
Well, when I was in Ristorante Diana, it's actually meaty, and then it tastes like jiajiang mian, which is something that I grew up in Beijing, like literally the feel is just noodle and meat, and then the coarseness, the meatiness of the sauce of the ragu reminds me of my childhood.
Oh.
That's why only that particular style of bolognese from Italy is my favorite, which in the whole entire Los Angeles, there's one restaurant actually serving it.
Really?
Yeah.
Which restaurant?
It's on Santa Monica, 2nd Street, Uevo.
Oh, okay.
The noodle, the pasta bar that yes. they ship their pasta from bolognese.
That's so,
so
funny.
I mean, and then when I had it, I was like, there's no garnish, there's no parsley, there's nothing, just meat and noodle. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
My favorite way.
So that was something that I was really having my mind blown by when I was researching recipes for it. You're not kidding. Like, no herbs.
No herbs.
They put in the celery, carrot, onion mix.
Yeah, the mirepoix, the
yeah,
simple thing.
And yeah. that is it in terms of extra flavors. It's
yeah.
wild. That's, but I mean, well, you mentioned the veal being better in Italy. Is it actually older than the veal that we eat here?
Well, I don't want to say being better. I just want to say more flavorful. Depends okay. on what you're looking for, right? Like
okay.
some people, like in America, you're looking for the super tender mil-fat veal chop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so like it's... It's creamy, it's really light, it's really mild in flavor. But if you're looking for that more flavorful piece of protein, so I think it must be the way that somebody correct me if you hear the podcast. must be the way that they raise the animal in Italy.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes, that
yeah.
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then the noodles are a big part of it too.
Because the egg.
Yes.
Anybody ever see? I mean, like when I normally make pasta in America right now, I use one type of egg called golden fertile egg, which the yolk is extra orange
yeah.
because the diet that they eat has a lot more flaxseed, other nutrition.
Yeah.
So the egg is more flavorful, and then the yolk is actually orange. Where in Italy and Japan, there's a lot of other countries, like their yolk is that beautiful.
Right.
Their chicken probably see the sun, they walk around, so the egg that they lay is a lot more beautiful, so therefore that everything about it is all better.
Yeah. 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 And they, okay, I mean, to back up a little bit, Italians are sort of known for being relaxed about things, living the dolce vita. That really ends when it comes to their food. They get so uptight
oh,
about
yeah.
the food.
They're so uptight about food.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they will probably get into a fist fight over the type of pastas that are appropriate to use with
totally.
Bolognese. And it has to be fresh pasta. That's the rule.
Yeah.
For like 98% of the people there.
Yeah. And then for me, it's like I also, when it comes to fresh house-made pasta, mm-hmm. I also have preferences too. I feel like now, especially now, there's a lot of restaurants use extrusion style. Their pasta machine is extrusion.
Yeah.
Versus the more traditional, like you knead a dough and then you press it through a pasta press and then you cut.
Okay.
So like the gluten development is very different. Extrusion is a lot more softer
oh.
versus you actually press the pasta has that real true al dente bite.
Oh.
So for me to stand up to a really great bolognese that's meaty and it's not blend down so much, it needs to have a strong, really good, well-made pasta to
yeah.
go with it.
Yeah, and that's the whole idea behind it. And the reason, so in places outside of Italy, especially in like Germany and England, spaghetti bolognese yeah. is really popular. And this makes Italians crazy because they're like, spaghetti is not the right pasta to be eating with it.
Well, sometimes I do it too. I'm guilty.
That's how I grew up eating it. Right? I had no idea that we were breaking all these rules by doing it. But I will say, I think it's fine. People can eat whatever they want. But in England, they call it spag bol.
Oh,
that's so, England, what are you doing? It's so gross. So also a ragu in Italy
mm-hmm.
is like almost a stew, so meaty.
Meaty.
And I would say that the bolognese is a ragu
mm-hmm.
and there is tomato in it, but it's really more of a meat sauce than a tomato sauce.
Yes.
And I have this theory that because there's that very popular supermarket brand of tomato sauce called Ragu, that's why we get confused. We think Ragu means tomato sauce.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I did. I mean, Ragu doesn't equal tomato sauce to me. Ragu means...
Well, you're more cultured.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, equals like a meaty sauce to me. So
yeah.
Like,
well, you're correct. So yeah. And the tomatoes in bolognese, it's only tomato paste. And sometimes it seems like maybe in the summer they'll do some fresh tomatoes.
Yeah. But very minimal. It's not a tomato based driven at all. And then a lot of times it finishes with a little bit cream and then anchovy paste to bring out that umami. So it should be like, it should look like meat. It shouldn't look like red.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Okay, no garnishes, no parsley, but did they offer you Parmesan?
Yes.
Okay. And did they offer it to you like, ugh, here's some Parmesan because you're foreign? Or was it like, this is what we do?
Yeah, this is what we do. Okay. There's some Parmesan.
Got it. Got it. So they were friendly about it.
Yes.
I've lived in Italy and just the difference... When the people are nice to you, they're so nice to you.
Yes.
And when they're just having a regular time and as Americans, we're not used to... indifferent service and they're not being rude, but we take it as rude because we're so used to people being so friendly.
You know how you always get them to like you immediately?
How?
You order a lot of food. And then you order kind of like, you know how like Italy, like to order properly, there's like the first course, right? And then there is a primi, which is a pasta course, followed by secondi, which is an entree course. So like, you know, a lot of times we don't do that. We just order pasta as an entree, right?
Yeah.
But when we go to Italy, we order properly, either each course. And they're like, oh, they actually know what they're doing. So I remember literally it was like me and my chef friend were... Like there was it was the last stop. We were about to go on the plane in Rome, and we went to this pizza place. And at first, when each of us order a pizza, there's a lot of tourists in them, and you can tell like the server is getting like really impatient.
Yeah.
And then as we're looking around, I was like, oh, but there's two more pizzas I still wanted to try. And I just look at him. I was like, you can put that down, right? He's like, yeah. So we immediately raise our hand and order two more pizza. And then they were like, really? They can tell, and we're like really excited about it at that moment. Once we finish a pizza, they pour us free Ramazzotti. So it's like, we're like, oh.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, we're like, I think we got them because we ate a lot.
Yes.
And we were ordered the correct things, I think.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I do have one of my most profound food memories was in Rome. And I was living out in Rome, not in the suburbs, but like in the outer circle of it. And I went to this neighborhood restaurant and it was one of the best meals of my life. But what I remember so strongly is there was an old man sitting next to us eating alone, and he had his like three courses, and then his dessert was just a peach. They just served him a peach on a plate.
Exactly. That's amazing. But it's probably like one of the most amazing peach from the tree, and you just like take a bite.
I know. I'm really sad because I was young at the time, and the people I were there with weren't like as food focused as I am. I wish I had ordered a peach as well, but like we were too American to know that. Like I was like, well, that's cool, but then I didn't think I could do it. So, yeah, that peach must have been the most incredible thing. So a lot of Italians will say that bolognese isn't even Italian because it's been co-opted and changed by so many other people. And again, going back to how uptight they get about their food. Okay. So Ryanair, which is one of the low-cost airlines in Europe, they had this promotion going about flights to Bologna. And they were talking about the food there, like in their ad copy, and they talked about spaghetti bolognese. And the Bologna Airport Twitter account tweeted to Ryanair, thank you, Ryanair.
That's not it.
Thank you, Ryanair, but Bologna is the home of tortellini, tagliatelle, mortadella, etc. But we don't have spaghetti. That's for an airport to get involved.
Funny.
That is just so crazy. But there is a writer who was looking through old documents because he had this theory. He grew up in Bologna and he's like, we ate it with dried spaghetti sometimes. We did it. And he thinks it dates back actually 5 centuries, the sauce for sure, but it changed. It did change. The earliest written recipe for a meat-based sauce called a ragu in northern Italy is from the 18th century, just outside of Bologna, and it was called macaroni al ragu. because macaroni used to just be the word for all pastas. And then in 1891, this famous cookbook author, Pellegrino Artusi, he wrote about a meat sauce called bolognese, and it doesn't have any tomatoes because tomatoes were a late addition to Italian cuisine. And it's still really associated with, I think, Southern Italian food. Northern Italian food is all about the cream-based everything.
Yep, butter.
So much butter. Oh, and that's the other thing. Bolognese calls for butter, not olive oil, to fry your vegetables in. That's so Northern Italian food.
I feel like also because, like, I cook, before I cook Italian, I cook really strictly French, like bouchon and anguille savoie. I mean, you're talking about like French. I have a love for fat, everything. Like,
yes.
I love butter, olive oil. Before I discover the complexity of olive oil, I'm like true butter lover. Yeah. So 100% that, like, when I first fell in love with Italian cuisine, it was Northern style Italian cuisine. And then slowly then I learned about Southern style. I was but yeah, totally.
Well, it's really like a geographic switch to go. Mm-hmm. You go from France through Northern Italy to Southern Italy. Northern Italy and Southern Italy don't get along. And Northern is considered the fancy part. And Rome is always trying to say it's Northern, but like, Milanese people will be like, Rome, you're Southern Italy. Get over yourself. So as a side note, again, because I just can't get enough of how Italians get so uptight about food, there was a chef, he's a Michelin chef, maybe you know him, Carlo Cracco. He lives in a small town outside of Milan, and he makes an amatriciana. And there's a town, Amatrice, which is where the pasta comes from. And so he was being interviewed, the chef, on national television about his amatriciana sauce, and he said that he actually uses, he puts one clove of garlic in it. The town of Amatrice.
No garlic. It's red onions only.
Yes. This is the way they put it. It was so condescending. We are confident that this was a slip of the tongue by the celebrity chef, given his professional history.
Oh my God.
They really shaded him.
That's so funny.
Okay. So in 1982, the Accademia Italiana della Cucina, an official organization in Italy, they did studies about what an official bolognese is. Okay. Tell me if this is how you would make it. First of all, it's tagliatelle, or they say fettuccine is allowed.
Yep.
Minced beef, they recommend flank steak.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder if flank steak means the same thing. Is flank steak the same thing as skirt steak to you?
No, flank is a bigger flat.
And which is skirt?
Skirt is the skinny long.
It probably
flank is bigger.
Yeah, maybe it just means like
inside, right?
Would you use skirt more than flank?
Yeah, I mean, like, skirt I use it to cook. Flank I would probably stir fry and cut them into smaller pieces.
Yeah, maybe there was a translation issue because skirt makes more sense. Anyway, beef. And then unsmoked pancetta.
Yep.
Carrot, celery, onion.
Yep.
A little bit of tomato paste.
Yep.
And then red or white wine?
White wine.
Isn't that wild? I feel like we think of red sauce means red wine.
Yeah, no. Because tomato and white wine, and then also it's like even also buco, like everybody think is versus red wine. No, it's always white wine.
So interesting. Yep. So the official body will allow red wine, but it does seem like white wine because that's what most of the cookbook authors say to use too. And then a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper to finish. But also, here's the other thing besides the lack of herbs that really freaked me out. Milk.
Yep. Cream. Something creamy.
Yeah. So is that just to like smooth it all out? Mm-hmm.
To round it up, the sweetness from the milk and everything, just round everything together.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you use cream or milk, whichever one you happen to have, or do you have a rule about which one?
Well, I normally use cream because it's just creamier.
Because of your French training?
Yeah,
you love the rich sauces?
Yeah, totally. Like I said, I love my fats.
Yeah, which is such a good thing to love. I love it. Okay, here are some, actually using cream, I guess, is considered controversial by some people.
Oh,
I know, you're a wild
good
one.
Good to know.
Here are some other controversial ingredients that some people consider to be canon and others don't. Uh-huh. Tell me what you think. Chicken liver?
Might be a little bit overpowered.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
We already talked about the wine issue. Nutmeg.
I hear people do that, not me.
Never you. What would be the usage of nutmeg?
I mean, like, you can add that sort of, you know, like the warmness, because you think about, it's more French, because you think about bechamel, so like a cream sauce, and then that always finished with a little bit of that nutmeg. And so I can see maybe that's the direction, because there's like a little creaminess to add to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I hadn't thought about this, but my favorite, like, I say favorite, the only macaroni and cheese recipe that I like is Martha Stewart's. And it's cayenne pepper and nutmeg. And it works really well.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. And it uses three different cheeses, too. I don't know. I don't remember. But it's always a hit every time I make it. So do you have any plans to go back to European food ever?
You mean cooking-wise or?
Professionally.
Professionally? I mean, like, yeah, I think ultimately, right now, what we're pushing is my heritage, Chinese. My next few projects is all Chinese American food or Chinese food, Shirley Chang style.
Yeah.
But because I've been cooking, I cook French for so long, I cook Italian. I really truly love Italian food. And also, there's such a great connection between Chinese and Italian.
Tell me more about that.
So, even when it comes to my cooking, for example, I'm just going to give you kind of like one of the dish that I have on my dinner menu. I'm most likely gonna call this dish Marco Polo right now, because I do a house make scallion pancake.
Okay.
Serve it with a hazelnut pesto. What? So for me, if you see the original form of focaccia, which Chisbecca, like Nancy Silverton's serve it, is focaccia is actually a layer leavened bread. It looks like scallion pancake ultimately.
So
it looks
layered like
scallion pancake. So it's like a round layer. Bread that's made with, I believe, is simple flour, water, and butter. And then they somehow laminate it.
Yeah.
So it becomes this pizza crust looking thing. But once you tear into it, there's layer and butter is super delicious. You can find that at Chisbecca. So I find my scallion pancake is very similar to that.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm almost like, I was like, scallion pancake, was that original focaccia? Original, you know how the Marco Polo and China direct connections and stuff like that. So I definitely take that thinking. So a lot of my cooking, because I love Italian food so much, and same thing as Chinese food. And then my main thing is I love everything dough. I love pasta. I love Chinese noodle. I love Chinese dumpling, filled ravioli, scallion pancake, focaccia, pizza. You know, like, see all these connections. So
totally.
I definitely don't rule it out that in the future I play out some Chinese Italian connection.
Yeah, amazing.
Under Miss Chi or Madam Chi group, for sure.
Oh, that sounds really good. Did you have to, like, for stuff like you, does like hazelnut pesto with scallion pancake just come to your head, or do you have to be more methodical about figuring out how to do that?
That actually just come to my head. So for me, I'm a chef that I cook with a lot of my feelings.
Okay.
So a lot of times that something will just come to me, or some flavor will come to me. But most importantly is I like to tell story with my food. Yeah, obviously I can cook like that every day on my daily menu. But when I have a chance to do events or anything like that, do a special menu, so I always try to tell a story, some sort of story and background, and spin it. So that's how I like to cook. So it's more meaningful when it comes to eating.
That's amazing. That's good. Man, okay. Well, having had your food once before, I'm super excited about this restaurant. And the Italian Chinese thing makes so much sense. And it sounds like you said in the future, but it sounds like you're already incorporating that into your menu.
Well, because also,
bit.
I wanted to say, because lots of my best friends and from my past work, we're really close, and then we always do collaborate dinner together. So the past few years, and we did a couple Chinese-Italian connection. So that is always sort of playing in my head. And then, so when we bounce the idea with each other, like, that would just naturally comes out. And then I have a lot of Italian. I have this Sylvia that I met on Top Chef. She's like my little Italian sister. She flies around doing event with me all the time.
Really?
We're going to do pop-up soon when I go visit to New York. But then literally, when we bounce off ideas, it's like I say Chinese dishes, she say Italian dishes, and then somehow we just have dishes all come out together. So it just is a very natural thing.
And I feel like in Los Angeles too, on the West Coast as a whole, you could really elevate the Italian food here by combining it with Chinese food, because we have such good Chinese food, and the Italian food isn't always like as amazing as the Chinese food. So bring it up a notch, but like Pacific Rim's it up. Awesome. Well, Shirley, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people follow you on social media so they can come to the restaurant when it opens?
Oh, cool. So I have my personal handle is Chef Shirley Chang, at Chef Shirley Chang, but spelling chef like C-H-F, there's no E. Oh. Because it doesn't fit.
Got it.
And then you can also follow us at Miss Chi Cafe, so M-S-C-H-I Cafe on Facebook and Instagram, and to let you know that when we open, which is very soon. But I just can't tell you how soon yet, but it's very soon.
Definitely. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me why, I'll say, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A.
Oscar Mayer, the first name in Bologna.